And welcome everyone to another episode of All Things Trek. I'm Oren.
I'm Grace.
And today we have the pleasure of having an interview with none other than Admiral Nechayev, Natalia Nogalich.
Hello.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the show.
Glad to have
You
you.
are our first admiral.
Oh my goodness. Well, thank you. I'm honored.
And I think you will probably be the highest ranking Starfleet individual ever interviewed by All Things Trek.
Well, good. That's the way it should be. Admiral Nechayev doesn't like to be outranked.
According to some of the books, and there's some questions about whether, you know, which of these are canon and which aren't, but some of the books have you as the commander in chief of Starfleet,
And
which I thought was pretty cool.
I think it's very cool, and I understand that the books, I have not read them, but that some of the books really go in depth with my character. And that she isn't quite as cruel as she was on the TV series. Is that true? Have you read the book?
I haven't read most of them. I have seen that it's you get more of a two, you know, a three-dimensional view of the Admiral. You don't just see her from Picard or Sisko's perspective.
Right,
So
that's good.
you get a more rounded view. Sorry, Grace, what was that?
Yeah.
It must be pretty flattering, though, to know that people have taken your character and gone more in depth with her, right?
Yes, it is. I'm very flattered by it, and I only wish that the series had continued so they could have gone in depth in the actual next gen season if there had been a season 8. Everyone keeps wondering what would have developed between Nechayev and Picard since he was making an effort to be kind with the Tea Party and the Valerian canopy, and there was a lot of speculation that we might have become allies and maybe more than that, and I don't know. It was kind of fun to think about. I certainly would have liked that very much, but unfortunately, it didn't continue that long. So we leave it to the books to carry us on into the next more the next incarnation, I guess.
That we do, yeah.
Now, I would like to hear about your book, One Woman's War, because it looks really interesting.
Oh, thank you. Well, I'd love to talk about it. I'm very thrilled with it finally coming out because I had been working on it for a long time. It was a passion project of mine based in part on the fact that my family is from the Balkans, and it takes place largely in the Balkans, although a good chunk of it is in New York City. It's set in the Shar Mountains, a little village in the cradle of old Serbia. And this story unfolds in the beauty of this small village, which would appear to be rather idyllic peasant life before the terrible civil wars of the 1990s came into the Balkans and the late 1990s, especially into Kosovo, which is part of old Serbia. So the book focuses on one woman's journey of surviving a terrible loss because of this civil strife, and how she goes for a visit to America to be with her sister, who had moved to America with her American husband, to heal. And what unfolds while she's there is that she finds out who the predator was that caused her loss and implements and centuries-old desire for revenge and returns to her homeland to even up the score. She's a young woman. She's in her early 30s, and so you don't expect this from her. And I can't tell you how it ends, but I will tell you the last third of the book is full of a lot of surprises and twists and turns
Right.
in this woman's journey, but it involves all the horror and murder and hatred that comes with civil war and how it breaks up friendships and loyalties and conflicting traditions. And, Sim, I wrote it specific to that area, but as I worked on it, I realized how global the whole idea was. And,
Right.
I mean, all you have to do is turn on the news for 10 minutes, and there's a part of the world where people living next to each other for centuries are suddenly not getting along. And it's a phenomenon that it seems it seems like a triple D. You know, it's, you know, what is it that suddenly turns neighbors against neighbors?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I chose to deal with, and managed to give it some humor, not about the basic situation, but from the characters and how they travel through the world. So it's got a little bit of everything. I'm very, very pleased with it, and I've been doing some book signings recently and getting amazing feedback from that. I just was in Chicago doing one, and now I'm doing one this weekend coming up in Alhambra. So I hope that you will allow me to send you an autographed copy of the book to each of you. You'll have to make sure I get your address.
That would be amazing. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I would like to do that.
We would be flattered.
Yeah.
Well, it's the first. Thank you. It's the first of a trilogy. Thank you for asking about it.
Mm-hmm.
The second one is called One Child Challenge, and I'm just in the early stages of that. And the third one is called One Man's Miracle. Each of the three books will stand on their own, but they will have the same characters, the ones that live anyway.
Oh,
in them.
Wow.
And so I'm excited about this. This has been I've written all my life, but I've never set my pen to doing a novel. You know, I've written essays and poetry and journals and a couple of plays and a screenplay, and, you know, who hasn't? Everybody in Los Angeles has a screenplay, it seems. But taking on a novel with... beg your pardon?
Everyone should try writing at least one.
Yeah, I think it's... Yes, exactly. I mean, God knows we need good narrative stories in film.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's only so much blowing up in CGI that a person can stomach, you know? finally, we got to hear a good story, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, is it, just as a technical question, is it available as an ebook?
It is.
Awesome.
Just recently on Kindle and iTunes and Barnes & Noble, and available on just about all the ebook venues, yeah. And in paperback, you can get it at Amazon.com.
I finally got
the ebook version out, which, you know, the ebook versions sell 3-to-1 to the paper versions. People are just completely mechanized in that realm, which is fine. You know, I've got a Kindle, too. I understand. It's very handy.
Yeah, I just know that Trekkies are very, very technological, so if it's
available, oh my goodness, yes,
you can reach.
Our Trekkies are amazing. Aren't they amazing? I mean, every year I just continue to be blown away by the intelligence and the inspiration that Trekkies bring to the conventions. I really do enjoy them very, very much.
Bless the Trekkies.
Do you have any convention story that you'd like to tell? Anything interesting?
Well, you know, and I did a convention in, I guess it was March of 99, was it, in Pasadena,
mm-hmm.
Maybe even before that, and I, for some reason, a lot of military people were there, and some of them were getting ready to go overseas. And they would come, you know, it's interesting. Star Trek magnetizes computer people, you know, people who are very advanced in thinking about space and the future. And it also is a magnet for military. And I happened to have a lot of people coming to my table and telling me they were getting ready to deploy. And I said, oh, wow, anything you want on my table is free. I can't take money from you guys who are going to fight for our country, and I'm a big supporter, both from Trek to the Troops and also other charities I give to Wounded Warriors. And anyway, so it was kind of funny because after a few military people came and I said, oh, here, and I signed off autographs and gave them to them pictures and so on. people started coming to my table in flocks, saying, well, my son's in the military, does that count? And I'm a retired military, does that count? And I'm thinking about going, you know, it's... I ended up giving away just about the whole store that particular convention, but it gave me great pleasure. And as a result, I have made some really great friends, Trekkie friends, who are military. And we've become friends outside of the conventions even. I see them, I hear from them.
That's awesome.
I keep track of them, if they're being deployed or not. And they started giving me, as a gift, they're challenge coins. Now, I don't know if you noticed on my table when you came by in Vegas, these beautiful coins that and I put them out on my table, not because I sell them, because they were gifts to me, I would never sell them, but because they're so beautiful to look at and they're kind of fun. Other military come by and they go, oh, wow, that's a challenge coin. And I learned that what those coins are is everybody who's in the military is supposed to carry their challenge coin. And if they're in a bar with a bunch of other military, and somebody throws down their challenge coin, everyone else has to come up with their challenge coin. And if somebody doesn't have it on them, they have to buy the round of drinks.
Oh, no.
And if the first person that throws down the challenge coin finds that everybody else also has their coin, then the first person has to buy the round of drinks.
That's really cool. I didn't know that's how it worked.
So I guess the story, I mean, is that my connection with the military has really been a blessing, that and it came through Star Trek. I've had nothing but good experiences. I have a friend, a Star Trek friend from Japan, who's a teacher, and every year he brings me a message from one of his students who's a Star Trek fan, and it's just a phenomena. I had no idea when I did the half a dozen episodes that I did that it would be the gift that keeps on giving. And this year was especially fun because I had people buying my book. And one gentleman bought my book, and then the next day he came down and he said, well, I got back to my hotel room and I'm on chapter 13 and I can't put it down and I can't believe that you said this or that in this chapter. You know, he was quoting back to me different images that I had written. I was so wowed. I thought, oh my goodness. I love to read, but I'm a slow reader. And this guy was finished with the book before the convention was over. So that was also a lovely thing. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned, like, you started talking about those episodes that you did and how it turned into this giant thing for you. I have some non-Star Trek questions, but I think I'm going to skip to some of my Star Trek ones just to make sure we get them in.
If that's okay.
Yeah, I'd like to know, how much did you know about Star Trek before you got, you know, before you auditioned for and got cast as the Admiral?
Excellent question. Well, of course, I had watched the original.
Mm-hmm.
And loved it. I wouldn't call myself a Trekkie, but I liked it very much. And I maybe saw a couple episodes of Next Gen. Wasn't really, didn't, it's not that I didn't like it, it's just, I don't know, it was before TiVo, and I just wasn't watching television that much at that particular period of my life. I was doing a lot of theater, you know, and you're out in the evenings and so on.
Right.
And the first time I went in, I can't remember exactly what the character was, but I auditioned for a character who was a little more vulnerable than the Admiral. I don't think she was, I don't think it was one of the officers.
Right.
And the feedback, and I didn't get that part. And the feedback that my agents got is they said, well, they liked you, but you were too strong for this character, and that. And so they cast someone else, but they will have you back for something else that may come up down the line. And you hear that a lot when you do episodic television. You know, you might give a good audition, and they think, oh, yeah, I'd like to use it, but it's not right for this particular thing. And then down the line, they'll call you back, and you get cast. You know, that happens. That's very common. Well, I really enjoyed everyone that I met, the producers at the audition, so I started watching it a bit more. And I was intrigued, you know. I don't know how long it was, maybe a few months. I got sent, and my agent said, they actually called for you to come in and read for Alina Nechayev. And I, without knowing anything about who Alina Nechayev was, I thought, oh, this is for me, because I love the Slavic name, and of course I have a Slavic name and Slavic blood. I thought to myself, oh, they wrote this for me, which of course I have no proof of that, but it was a nice thing to think going in. And the qualities that they had seen in me before, the strengths and so on, fit with this character. So I nailed it. And when I got it, and it, mm-hmm. I didn't know that I would be back for more than one, because they tend not to tell you that until they see how it goes, you know, the first time. But it went really well in the first episode I did, and so then I went back for a few more. And, of course, meeting Picard and Jonathan Frakes and all the rest of the Marine, all the rest of the extraordinary individuals on the set made me want to watch it more religiously, and then I did. I was watching it very regularly after that, not just because I was in it that one time, but because I loved what I saw. I loved the doing of it, and then I did a few more, and after that, I was hooked. And I've gone back and watched, you know, previous episodes as well. And, of course, mm-hmm. I, along with half the world, adore Patrick Stewart, and I just wonder how many broken hearts there are out there now that he just got married.
So many.
So many. I know, he's such a handsome man and so charming and just
he is
wonderful.
Very nicely also, I must say.
Yes. He was great. We were very good, you know, comrades, colleagues, I should say, on the set. And of course, when they called action, we became adversaries. And when they called cut, we were buddies. So it was a lot of fun.
That's really cool.
That's kind of a long answer to how much did I know about Star Trek. But
that's
fine.
Oh, we're all about long answers.
Sort of. Hope.
Well,
now,
what else? What are the questions about? Of course, I went on then to do a couple episodes of
D-Space Nine.
DS9, I'll tell you a funny story about DS9.
I said, please do.
My character was very dismissive in Next Gen of Jonathan Frakes, right? I mean, I was always, you don't need to be here, you're excused, you know, very dismissive of him. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was written in the script. It wasn't something I brought to it. That was the story. And he would, you know, pretend to be so wounded when I would, you know, get rid of him or tell him he wasn't needed. Well, I get to the set of DS9, and I'm playing the same character, Admiral Nechayev, but this time dealing with Sisko and his issues with the Maquis and whatever. And I get to the set, and I find out Jonathan Frakes is directing the episode. And he comes over to me, and he rubs his hands together and goes, now I can get back at you. but, of course, he didn't. He was kidding. We had a perfectly harmonious shooting. But it was so cute, you know. He thought, finally, he was the boss of me, because he was the director of the episode. And, you know, the director has the final word on the set. And he and I get on great also. It's interesting how different the relationships can be on the screen and on the set. Mm-hmm. You know, on the set, both DS9 and Next Gen, the set was so harmonious. It was so, everyone loved each other. They were supportive of each other. They were there for each other. And then, you know, whatever the story called for, you know, there could be the strife and the competitions and the whatever stresses, conflicts were going on. And they, well, of course, there were superb actors, each and all.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And how was it different playing across from Avery Brooks as opposed to Patrick Stewart?
Quite different. Avery, his character, the way he develops Sisko anyway, was very explosive.
Yeah.
And, of course, Picard would, you know, I would say, okay, like when I, for example, in the episode when I told him he had to move the Indians off the land, and he was very upset about having to do that, and I just very quietly looked at him and said, look, if you're not up to it, I'll get somebody else to do it, which kind of insulted him, but he said, that won't be necessary. You know, he was always kind of tucked in, you know, Captain Picard. Mm-hmm. Or when I said to him, the next time you have an opportunity to destroy the Borg, I expect you to take it. He just looked at me and very quietly said, yes, sir. You know, he was more pulled in.
Right.
Avery was completely the opposite. As a matter of fact, one of the episodes, and I can't, was it Maquis or, I can't remember what the name of it was. He blew up. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't like the command that I had given. And I'm sitting at a desk, and he comes storming in and just blows up, and the camera goes to me, and I sit very quietly, and I watch him, and I let him blow up. It's like letting a child let off steam, almost, yeah. You know. And when he was done, I simply said, and you will carry out the orders as commanded. And
yeah.
He stormed out. Now, so it was, they were completely opposite in emotional rendering, you know. One blew up. The other kept it inside. But ultimately, they had to, they both had to obey. That was the fun part, you know. But I like Avery Lai. He's a terrific actor as well, of course.
Yeah. I feel like...
Yeah, but Sisko had a temper.
I think Starfleet Command, whenever they have, like, an order that they know is going to be unpopular, they send Admiral Nechayev to do it.
And I know. It's like, who's going to yell at a blonde admiral? But, you know, Avery did.
Across the galaxy to give any bad news or unpopular opinions.
I know, exactly. Or to reprimand them for messing up, you know. It was me that had to come to the fore. I have to tell you, Oren and Grace, I adored the character. Even though she was tough and hard-nosed, I always write a biography of all my characters that I play, you know, of the life and the past life their earlier life, how they got to where they are in command. And I knew that some of the things my character had to do in the episodes would be unpopular, like replacing Picard for a while and et cetera. And I just worked to have her have a principle behind what she was doing that she wanted to uphold, to preserve the Federation. What did that mean to her? Why was she the one who had to be, you know, the buck had to stop with her to say, you know, this is unpopular, but, you know, to be the parent, if you will.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to say, no, you can't stay out till 2 a.m., you're only 11, you know, or some kind of reprimand. And I worked hard to make that real for myself so that it didn't come off just as a hard nose without a reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
That's my job as an actor, to do that.
I always wished they would have brought that character back for the Dominion War, because I feel like she could have really shone in that environment.
I agree. I think that would have been, you really want to know what a superior officer is made of if they're in the middle of a war.
Right.
You find out what the commander-in-chief is really all about if there's a war.
Yeah.
And not just giving orders about moving, you know, troops around. But there's you know, in an actor's career, there's a long list of wishes. I wish I had done this. Even though I'm still acting and enjoying the work that I do very much, I think everybody has wishes that don't get realized. And, you know, kind of roll with it.
Yep.
That's how it is.
Now, you've played a lot of roles outside of Star Trek, and I'm just wondering, what are some of your favorites?
Oh, good question. Well, you know, I did a series last year for ABC called Red Widow, which sadly did not get picked up for this year, and it was about the Russian Mafia, and I tell you, this woman that I played, I just loved her, and it was starring Radha Mitchell and Goran Bismich.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a mob wife, or actually an ex-mob wife, and I was still in love with my mob husband, and with kids that were all in trouble, grown kids, and it was just wonderful. It's now available, I guess, on Netflix. It was called Red Widow. That was one of my favorites. I love the work that I'd done on film with David Mamet, who I knew from early theater days in Chicago and have been in 5 of his movies. One of my favorites is Homicide with Bill Montagna and W.H. Macy, which we did some years ago, and I played an Israeli Mossad. I play a lot of foreign women, obviously. I play Russian Slavs. I play Italians. I play Israelis. I did a few episodes as the Israeli ambassador on West Wing, which was also a lot of fun. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to ask, did you say that you played a Mossad agent?
I did. In Homicide, David Mamet's film. Not the series that came after the film. But he did a film called Homicide with Joe Mantegna from Criminal Minds and W.H. Macy. From Shameless and 1,000 other things.
That's really
cool. He won the Academy Award for Fargo. But anyway, I played a Mossad agent in that. And that was real, and I had to speak some Hebrew, which I do speak 6 languages, but Hebrew isn't one of them. So I went up to the University of Judaism to see if I could learn Hebrew in time for the movie, which was very naive. Yeah, I know. It's like, I didn't know that how difficult that language would be. And my teacher, who was a wonderful woman, said, excuse me, why are you learning the Hebrew? Because I'm not Jewish, you know. She said she wanted to know why I was pursuing it. And I told her. She said, oh, you bring the script to me, and then I help you with it. We learn it phonetically. You'll never learn enough Hebrew to speak, you know. I was starting with, you know, cat, dog, mom, dad, how are you? But, you know, and I was never going to get to the point where I could. So she coached me, and I learned it phonetically. Let's see, there's so many things I loved doing. On stage, of course, I've done 3 Broadway shows, and I love doing Accomplice, which was a comedy thriller on Broadway with Jason Alexander and Michael McKean. Oh, my gosh. It was written by Rupert Holmes, and I played Jason's wife, who was trying to off him so I could run away with his partner, who was Michael McKean. And it was just a comedy of errors, because I couldn't quite manage to kill him. So that was a lot of fun. What else? They stop to think of all the different things that I've done. All of a sudden I go blank.
It's a long list.
It is a long list I like the sitcoms I've done too. I did Hot in Cleveland and Drake and Josh and Guys with Kids and Suburgatory and a lot of just Charmed, a lot of fun comedic roles. Frasier, that I liked. I think I'm probably more of a dramatic actress, but I don't know. I like doing comedy as well.
Yeah.
And I've been blessed in the sense that my my resume has lots of diversity in it. You know, I've played so many different ethnic characters, and obviously also, you know, good old-fashioned girls from Chicago. I'm sure I've played one somewhere along the line. Oh, yeah, Andy Davis, who directed The Fugitive. I was in his very first movie called Stony Island, where I played a Chicago girl, and then later he hired me again in a movie called Steal Big, Steal Little. That I don't know if I was from Chicago or not. I certainly had a Chicago accent in it, which I've worked very hard to lose. But I have a lot of favorites. It's it's very hard to nail down what I love the most.
That's fair. We are coming up on the end of our time, so what are the upcoming projects that you're working on, and where can we go to see them?
I just did an episode of NCIS, which I think it already aired, to be honest, and I don't know what the next television project will be, but I am working on the second book.
Yay.
I'm also writing a one-woman show, which I'll probably do in small theaters, around LA before I take it anywhere else. I'd like to do it in Chicago and New York at some point, but that's a years and years project. Mm-hmm. And then I just continue to go up for TV things. I continue to teach. I'm very busy all the time. And, you know, when people say, well, what are you doing? I go, what am I doing today? Oh, well, writing, coaching, giving an interview, going to the gym. There's a myriad of activities.
If you're busy, you're not bored, so.
No, never. That's one thing I've never been in my lengthy life is bored. I don't know the meaning of it, but active, yes. Everything that I give my passion to gets realized sooner or later. It takes time, but you guys know that. I mean, look, you're working on your interviewing and your podcast, and it's so successful, and I know it's because you guys have worked so hard on it, so God bless you both for that. And I'm very grateful that you asked me to share with you my experiences, because I enjoy doing that, and I really am one of these people who loves what she does. I love my life, and I'm grateful.
Well, we're so glad to have had you on the show, and also I would like to point out that you have a distinct honor on our show, actually, of being our first ever admiral we've had on the show.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I wish I had some orders to give you, but I'll just say my command to you is to live long and prosper. let me know when I can hear this, because I would enjoy that as well.
All right.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for joining us. This, I think, we've at the end of our time, so this will be All Things Trek. This will be All Things Trek, signing off.